everyone, and welcome to another episode of Australian Politics Live. This is the second in our end-of-year wrap series. The first was on the political year just gone and the year coming up. This fabulous episode, we're going to hit peak nerd. I'm joined by my friends who I love to call the fiscal drags. There is Greg Jericho, who likes to now be introduced as the Walkley award-winning Greg Jericho from Guardian Australia. Say hello to the pod people, Greg.
Hello, pod people.
Lovely. Also, we have the wonderful Gareth Hutchins, who is another of our Guardian Australia colleagues, who is has an economics bent. So say hello, Gareth.
Hello there.
And the most fabulous news is my dear friend Shane Wright, who is the economics editor from the West Australian newspaper and fellow 80s tragic, who has joined us for this end of year wrap. Say hello, Shane.
Hello, Shane, and I am not wearing a beret.
So he says. And, of course, again, as I did in the first episode of our end of year series, I forgot to say who I am. It's Catherine Murphy, as is usual, political editor for Guardian Australia. So given this wonderful group of people in our recording cupboard in Parliament House, it's pretty obvious that we're going to be talking about the economy. And we're going to be talking about the implications, really, of where we're up to with the economy for budget management into the new political year. So given we've had new GDP figures this week, it seems a reasonable place, I think, to start there. So what are the GDP figures telling us, Shane, about where the economy is at?
They're telling us that it's not too good at the moment. If you're in a little rowboat, the water be coming over the edge, and Greg and Gareth would be manning the oars and also bailing the buckets.
I'd be navigating.
And if Gareth was navigating, then we know all would be lost.
Except Jericho's handy with a bucket.
Apparently he is. He is. But look, the figures said right. The economy shrank 0.5% in the September quarter, the first time the economy has gone backwards since Cyclone Yasi shut down the mining sector back in 2011. Probably at 0.5, there's only three other quarters since the last recession, and you and I remember, and young Greg remembers that recession. Yeah. Gareth was just not even a thought, really, in that period.
Probably, I was having them at the time.
It was probably a twinkle in someone's eye.
Someone's eye, yeah. So that, in terms of historically, the figure, it stands out there because Australians have done so well for so long, not having to experience a negative quarter of economic growth.
Pretty amazing. Greg, thoughts?
Well, my kind of initial thought is, we might have to start getting used to this type of thing, because what happened in this September quarter is that kind of everything went wrong at the same time. And the problem is, in the past, we've been able to have that happen, or at least say a few things go bad, and there'd be one good thing that would at least keep us above water, keep us out of negative territory. It'd be something like, a good, strong public investment in one quarter would be enough to keep us going, or there'd be strong net exports to keep us going, or strong household consumption. This time around, the only thing that was good was household consumption, and it's not as good as it used to be. You know, back prior to the GFC, normally it'd grow by about 3.5% or so. Now it only grows by about 2.5%. And it's not enough when net exports are down, which might just happen because we get a big import buy of something, or if public investment is down in one quarter. It's not enough to keep us floating, especially when we're still living in this wonderful environment of declining mining investment, which, you know, dominates everything. So what it means is we're an economy now that is more reliant on net export growth than we used to. Basically, when I was growing up, when pretty much most of our the modern economy period, we've been reliant on demand, which is a combination of consumption and investment. And net exports were just sort of there you know, they were a minor kind of thing in the grand scheme of the whole economy. But now net exports is just as important as investment and consumption. And when you've got that, it means things get a bit more erratic. Things are a bit less stable because you're reliant upon a number of small things rather than some big things that will sort of always, you know, keep you in good stead. And so I kind of wonder if, I'm not suggesting we're going to be going into recession or anything like that, but I think we, the reality is in the past year, there have been a couple, at least three times where we were very close to going backwards. And it was one thing that just purely due to almost coincidence or just good timing kept us afloat. This quarter, that didn't happen. And I think it's going to be something that is more likely to occur in the future than it did in this past 25 years where we've never gone backwards.
Mm-hmm. And Gareth, are you inclined to go on a growth journey with the Treasurer?
I'm inclined to be slightly more optimistic than the tone at the moment.
Oh, good.
Because the figure,
the optimism
the figure, those young people, they've never seen anything tough, have they? No.
Do it, Gareth. Push through. Push through.
Not have lines on my face, but the figure was worse than expected.
God, smackdowns.
But I think for the most part, it was the result of things that don't necessarily represent a turning point or long-term trends. So the message from this figure is that the economy probably wasn't as strong as previously published national accounts suggested. But having said so, having said that, the next national accounts would be better than expected. Now, if we think back to the June quarter release, it implied that the economy had grown by 3.3% through 2015-16, and that was probably an exaggerated picture of what the economy was doing. And the Reserve Bank obviously thought so because it cut rates at least twice during that period. It's actually cut rates four times over the last 2 years. So it looks like the economy hadn't really been growing in excess of its trend pace during last year, which we had confirmation of today, but it's probably not as bad as today's numbers suggest either. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I don't think we're in the first quarter of a recession. I think things will turn around next quarter.
Well, we all hope that, really.
Spoken by a man who's the worst thing ever to happen to him is finding out that his surfboard doesn't have enough wax on it.
We are coloured, possibly, because we do actually remember. I tried to find my first job in the last recession.
I applied for Dolly magazine.
Oh,
I did, and
no.
They knocked me back.
The cover?
Not the cover, to write for them. And not as Dr. Dolly, but or Dolly Doctor, but it was a bit sad.
I had no idea.
There you go. That's how tough that that period was, yeah. Trying to find work. Mm. And this is one of the interesting things with these figures, and to bring it back into the 21st century, mm-hmm. is that the jobs and growth election mantra that all drove us all crazy through 8 very long weeks.
Mm, but who's counting?
Since July 2, the country's lost about 40,000, 50,000 full-time jobs, and you've had this saying, Raya, the economy's contracted. So you've got to ask, what the hell were we talking about in that whole period? Because the economy absolutely lost pace through the election and post the election. We've maybe, and I'm with Gareth in this way, I don't think we're going to see another quarter of negative growth because there's some signs that maybe consumers, those who can afford their smashed avo on toast, have got out there and are having a bite to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And that the construction side, particularly the housing sector, the mining sector is not coming back, but the housing sector probably will have got over the weather that slowed a bit of construction down on the East Coast through this particular period. So there are certain events that gave us the figure of a negative quarter. But Greg's also right. Whether we get back to the norm of strong growth is another thing. And you're running into demographic factors. You're running into the parliamentary factors at play. And whether the economy that we now have can sustain itself and elevate growth.
Well, and there's a whole which we sadly can't get into in this podcast because we're going to have to look forward to the new parliamentary year in a minute. But there's a whole international debate among experts about whether we're sort of moving into some post-growth phase, that whether or not economies will continue to grow as they have done in recent times. Anyway, that's possibly a discussion for another pod. But anyway, so we've sort of got a picture of the economy, right? So kind of anemic, and hopefully it'll be a better quarter next time. Not really sure, but we've got some underlying issues. So how does this set up the sort of economic conversation that the government's got to really have, I think, in the new year? Why don't you kick off, Greg?
Well, I mean, the GDP is always such a huge number that it barely makes any sense to anybody, and it's hard to actually ever sort of suggest what does this mean for me. And so the real economic issue for the next year is really going to be what Shane talked about, and that's full-time employment, because it's just been horrible. I mean, we have a situation at the moment where the unemployment rate's actually not too bad historically, but it doesn't make the kind of sense that it used to in the past. In the past, when you had an unemployment rate, what is it, about 5.6% now, normally when you've got that, you're also at a situation where there's fairly strong full-time employment growth, and yet full-time employment is going backwards. And so we're in this era of low full-time employment, fairly strong part-time employment, and with that the issues of is it permanent or is it casual. Combining with that comes the weak wages growth, and so that is going, and that has impacts for the budget in terms of income tax revenue and things like that.
And those, so, those part-time workers are on lower wages. So the amount of tax you're going to get out of those, there's more of them who will be getting a lot of the, all of the tax-free threshold.
Yeah, so and because also a lot of where the employment growth is coming is in the lower paid jobs. And so what you're going to have is, regardless of what happens with GDP, and I agree, I think, you know, we're not going to go into a recession, I don't think so, unless something happens, like we have a cyclone or things like this, although we're already sort of talking about what's already happened.
Or there's an external shock.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, a trade war with China.
Yes. But really, for the government, it's going to be dealing with that issue of big numbers maybe looking okay, but people's lives feeling like we're really just, you know, dragging along the ground.
And that presents all kinds of political difficulties, particularly if you that whole different why we've had the sort of political upheavals that we've had in the States and that we've had in Europe is connected to people's actual economic circumstances, to their household income and to things going backwards. In Australia, we haven't really gone backwards. We've had a bit more of a spread in inequality, but we haven't gone backwards in the way that they have in other countries. Hence, the sort of Trump effect is more contained in Australia. But if there's not wages growth over the long term, you can easily see a set of circumstances where we could be in a very similar condition to the US and Europe. Anyway, just a passing political fancy, Shane. How do you reckon the government's sort of facing up to the economic task?
It's got a plan that it hasn't been able to get through.
What
it's,
is it?
It's the jobs and growth plan. Those company tax cuts, which is interesting. Given we've Scott Morrison has talked about the importance of business investment and how important those tax cuts are. Except, of course, failing to mention they go for 10 years and that the firms that will benefit the most and deliver the biggest investment, they're the ones at the end of the chain. And if you really believe how important business taxation reform is, especially the way that we're going about in this country, which is giving it to the smallest players first, you look over the last 18 months and business investment is falling. So if you're into that sort of empirical take on things, you'd be going,
well,
what the hell?
Are you talking about facts?
Well, look, I would never talk facts in the federal parliament. Mm. That would leave you as an outlier straight off and perhaps an outlaw.
Mm.
But
potentially.
That's where, like, I think too often we've forgotten that this government actually has to deliver a tough budget next in May next year, and it hasn't tilled the economic ground and in fact, it's ebbing away from them with these national accounts. And I think the jobs growth issue is particularly pertinent as well, and that's feeding into the One Nations, the Xenophons, the Jackie Lambies of the world.
And that's why they're so happy about the rise in the terms of trade at the moment, because it can buy them some breathing room.
Yeah.
Because this income will be coming in from, you know, this. We've got record, well, commodity prices have shot back up again. I think Matt Canavan, the Minister for Northern Australia, flicked off a tweet the other day saying how great it was that commodity prices were so high.
Go iron ore, I think, was the hashtag.
What was it?
Go iron ore, yeah. Go coal.
Yes.
Oh, cool.
Because, yeah, it would buy them some breathing space, but you just got to see how they're going to use it. Because if those commodity prices in the terms of trade are sustained at higher levels, let's just hope that they use the money in a way that Peter Costello and John Howard didn't.
Mm-hmm. So expand, Gareth. In what way do you mean? Spell it out.
By baking in tax cuts to the budget or giving the money away.
Oh, this is what they shouldn't do.
Yes, they shouldn't do that.
So what should they do?
Well, they should use it to either pay down the deficit while maintaining their strict budget line.
Mm-hmm. What about investments in productive infrastructure?
That would be a thing too.
That includes education and health, and too often health in particular gets left behind.
You're talking about social capital.
Social capital. We're talking about the fact that we're an ageing population. We've hit peak. Baby boomers are retiring. But you're seeing it in the jobs figures. The participation rate is falling, and this is one of the reasons that the unemployment rate isn't actually giving you the best read. Because if the participation rate had actually kept track over the last 5-6 years, unemployment would be well north of 7%. But we've just had retirees going, "Yep, I'll live on the pension. I'll enjoy my time down the coast because I've worked a good hard life." Good luck to them. But for those left behind, and Gareth is going to be the last taxpayer left, I think, at this rate. Mm-hmm. That's an issue that the government and both sides, it's not just the coalition, but the ALP and the Greens and One Nation and Nick Xenophon and every other person who calls themselves a senator has to come to grips with.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I'll throw this into the mix. I didn't actually prepare this with Team Fiscal Drag here, but I'd like a bit of spontaneity maybe to round out. In our political end of year wrap, we did a quick sort of winners and losers, like sort of strong performers and less strong performers. Sort of in the economic context, I mean, I don't know, maybe we could sing quietly amongst ourselves while everybody gathers their thoughts, but whether it doesn't have to be as sort of horribly cliched as who won and who lost and who's up and who's down, but just things that people that have sort of resonated in your consciousness over the last 12 months as making reasonable contributions in the economic space. Doesn't have to be politics, can be outside politics. Just interested in some thoughts about who's stuck out, if anybody.
Well, I don't know if there's any, I'm not sure about winners and losers, but certainly the one who is going to have a fairly strong impact, has already started having an impact and will have a massive impact next year, is Donald Trump, where he's already moving markets, having an impact on the interest rate that governments are paying, including our government, purely because the market, everyone has no idea what he's actually going to do, so they're all betting. And I suggest they're probably overestimating the impact or perhaps underestimating. I don't think they've got it right, basically, because they're all guessing. The impact that he will have in terms of trade, it's not going to be too massive for Australia, because really the US-Australia trade is he's not going to mess with that, because the trade alliance is actually in the United States' favour rather than Australia's. But in terms of what that will have on the impact of inflation in America and how that flows through into us in terms of interest rates, and also what it'll do with our exchange rate and and all that will have major impacts on everything. And that's just assuming that he doesn't completely go insane and actually start a war somewhere.
Yes, well, that's
but not. You know, I think that's, and it's something that I have no idea how Treasury or the Reserve Bank would factor in that into their calculations, because no one can go on what he said in the past and think, oh, well, that's how he's going to act and that's where we'll be at, because he's said the whole gamut of responses on every economic issue. So I think that is going to be something that is really going to – could be the outlier that affects how we go, because in the end we're a little cork in the international economic ocean, and when the Queen Mary of the US economy goes past, we certainly get buffeted by it.
More time to get the surfboard out. Yes. What about you guys?
Well, I think to bring it back to Australia and to the Turnbull government, I think a standout performer for the last 12 months, and particularly through the election campaign, was Matthias Cormann. When you think of the source of stability that he has been, his ability to remain on point, to negotiate with the Senate crossbench behind the scenes, and to keep a really tight rein from the finance department, if they would be lost without him, I think.
Mm. Yeah, well, he's certainly a mainstay, definitely. Mm. And what do you think, Shane?
I've got two. I think Chris Bowen, in terms of policy, has driven so much of what's gone on, both inside his own party and inside the government. I don't think without Chris Bowen moving on superannuation last year, the Scott Morrison would be hanging around with changes in much needed changes in superannuation at the end of this year. The debate on, say, negative gearing and the capital gains tax concession is ongoing, and it's being driven by the ALP. But I also want to mention Scott Morrison, because I think Morrison has improved as the year has gone on. And people you've got to remember how wet he was coming in. Remember, this is a person who had not been dealing in a prime economic portfolio when he took the reins last year, and he was shaky quickly there. Mm. He's lost on some fights, but you can tell that he's actually getting a grasp of the narrative that they need to pursue. And in terms of a treasurer, there's the policy side, but you've also got to sell the story to voters. And so that's how important they are. And that's why Costello was so good, and that's why Keating was so good. They could sell to voters what the economic story of the government of the day was, and that's how pivotal it is. And I think definitely he's improved as we've gone through the year.
Mm. Okay, well, we can wrap, I think, on that note. Hopefully there's a few chunky thoughts for all of you before we all kind of power down the laptops and head for the beach, not before time. So I want to thank again my wonderful guests today, the Walkley Award-winning Greg Jericho, our dear colleague Gareth Hutchins, and our dear friend and neighbour Shane Wright, minus Beret, so he says. Thank you all very much for listening to this series over the course of the year. I suspect this will be it for us for this political year, but of course we will be back in the new year. If you want to check out other podcasts produced by Guardian Australia, you can just search for them in the same way that you search for us. So hit up your podcast app, or go online, or go to iTunes. Behind the Lines is another Guardian Australia podcast that you might want to check out. This one is produced by the wonderful Miles Martignoni, who has been a pillar of strength through many podcasts this year, including my personal favourite podcast, which was the 2 a.m. podcast on election night, which involved possibly a little bit of Save Blanc that we may not have fully disclosed to the listeners. So thank you very much to Miles for huge efforts pulling this together over the course of the year. We hope you've enjoyed it. And if we don't speak between now and the festive season, take very good care, be safe, be with your loved ones, disconnect, totally forget about politics, because 2017, I suspect, is going to be a blockbuster. Thanks for listening.